Like, and that is an issue these days, because digital rights are no longer negotiated in these classical issues, IT security, data protection. They are relevant in all kinds of social debates and proposals in other politics fields as well. You probably know the platitude that, how is it, the internet trademark, the digitalization is ubiquitous in all areas of life these days. We kind of roll our eyes then, but there is something to that, and there is a consequence. Because in all social areas, we have to think about digitalization. It's always being considered, and the defense of our digital rights, therefore, is relevant in all these fields, and that's what makes it so very hard to oversee. And that's what we are going to talk about and share with you tonight. And our aim, our objective, is to motivate you and us. A few years ago on Congress, we had this motto, form gangs, because that's what we want to do. There's so much to do, and that's what we will see in a moment. But first, Tom, maybe a few words about the Digitale Gesellschaft.
The Digital Association is a bit older, 12 or 13 years, roundabout, and we try to protect data in the digital space and protect consumers. And today it's going to be about Europe. We're organized in IDRI. We forgot the logo for that, EVI, and European Digital Rights. It's an organization that comes from a net politics bubble with the idea, let's do something in Brussels. The Digital Association, since it got founded, it's more or less a part of this European networking, and some of the people who founded it are in Brussels today and try to make politics there. Yeah, and the European layer has always been relevant, but I only started a few years ago, so I think actually all the topics we focus on have a European dimension and are mainly European topics. Chat control, DSA, upload filters, GDPR, the big topics of the last years, these are all European topics. Also, kind of, yeah. As I said, I am from Superlab, as opposed to DigiLabs. We're a very young organization, 4 years old. Superyears is a lab for feminist digital futures. We're coming from the corner, or we're driven by the question of societal justice, intersectional perspectives to societal and technical problems and challenges. We're coming from a bit kind of a holistic view. We're not a classical digital organization. We're young. That means we are discovering the European level. We're at EDRI, the European Digital Rights, the networking organization that Tom mentioned. We just got an affiliate member, and we think it's totally essential to get engaged on a European level, but also beyond. Digital rights don't stop at borders, and the internet doesn't stop at borders either, fortunately, yet. So for us, it makes a lot of sense to have a social, a global perspective, and to look, when we're dealing with digital rights, which rights, which justice, which questions of power are we talking about, and who and what do we need to think about to develop good solutions there. Digital politics is just bigger than national politics. Digital politics, this is a little overview about things that are running or have just been completed. Law initiatives on the European level, those are the only the ones that are only about net politics. There are others who have a component about digital or net politics, but this is an overview over what's running currently. Organizations like us, or maybe you, all of these things should be a topic for us or you. And in these lawsuits, fundamental rights are negotiated, and I'm pretty sure not everyone knows all these initiatives. It's important to follow what happens there, but it's almost impossible to do so. We won't be able to say something to everything, but we want to pick out a few points. Some things we're working about right now. It's not final, but just to show you what's happening there, why this is relevant. A lot of you have perhaps noticed the thing about chat control. If not, get informed. It's the CSAM regulation, Child Sexual Abuse Material Regulation, or CSAR, sometimes it's called. That's a point where maybe lots of you noticed the future of communication is at stake. A dystopian surveillance structure is supposed to be established where all messages hosting content will be automated and analyzed in real time. It's astounding. In Germany, at least, we managed to get some discussion about this and some publicity. In other countries, that's not happening at all. And with this topic, it kind of works to break it down from the European level and bring it to the broad public. But that took a lot of time and energy. Since like a year, more than a year, we're sitting on making this a topic. And aside from that, there is a lot that most people don't notice at all. Another topic, digital identities. Yes. And about those, I can talk in a semi-qualified way. There are other networks who are very engaged in that. Thomas Lohninger from Epicenter already did a talk on this camp. You can look that up at CCCDE if you want to get informed about more. What is this topic about? Digital identities. That means some sort of infrastructure, government infrastructure and cross-government network infrastructure shall be created with which we can identify ourselves. This regulation is called eIDAS 2.0. eIDAS is the regulation about electronic identification and trust services for electronic transactions in the internal market. Very short and clear, but it's important. It's important to not get confused by those terrible titles they're giving, but stay on. What is digital identities about? We need to identify ourselves digitally with the use that we can get government services through this identification, but eIDAS is going further. They want that these digital identifications can also be used for commercial purposes, but that means they can be used perhaps where we didn't need to identify ourselves so far. So perhaps there's an over-identification, an increase of situations in which we need to identify ourselves with our real identities. And I don't need to tell any one of you why this is a problem. And if that happens digitally and potentially it will get collected and saved, that's an issue. We need to stay on. And a lot of people are sitting on that. Thomas Lohninger, I already mentioned, this topic needs more power. Perhaps you feel called to continue with this.
Okay, and there's an issue that has received a lot of attention. It's the Digital Services Act, DSA, the so-called basic platform law that has been passed now. And there was a lot of debate when the lawmaking started. And then during the negotiations in Brussels between the institutions, it was kind of under the radar, and a few people that were specialized in it looked at it. But although the large people like Facebook and everyone came and got involved, the issue wasn't really debated at all in Europe. We tried to link this to the issue of behavior-based advertising and try to turn a few screws on surveillance capitalism, but no one was really looking because it was at the hidden EU level. There was not much in the subject press, and now we're entering the implementation phase, and there's a lot of debate. Is the German network enforcement law going to be replaced, the Netzwerkdurchsetzungsgesetz? But during the actual negotiation of the letters of the law, when things could have been changed, there was fairly little public attention, except from a number of select people and the big tech lobby who tried to take influence and were quite successful in that. Now, for the next issue, I'd be interested to hear who of you has heard about it, and that is the digital euro. Could you raise your hands if you... Okay, that's quite a few, but not everyone by far. That's a fairly new, well, not that new proposal. It's now getting more concrete, though, because the EU has realized that we have no European payment provider, which is kind of sad. So we have PayPal, the large credit card companies, and there are moves to not let this take being get out of one's hands completely. So there's a European payment provider that's planned, but not a private one, but covered by the central banks in the member states, so that the euro is actually the currency that this is about. And this should enable us to transfer small amounts of euros into a digital wallet and use that to pay online without having to use other providers. And again, it's a proposal that is somewhat about digital identities. It's motivated in order to create more access, but just like with the European identities, the problem is, what if the system is rolled out? Will this let other options fall under the radar, which is actually paying in real cash or not having to identify yourselves? Will that go away? And with these digital infrastructures being rolled out, we have some public services that are really a problem in banks and other institutions, because if they will then exclusively use that new technology and we can no longer with the same convenience use cash or use our paper or plastic personal ID card in order to identify ourselves, this is going to be hard. There's a study by German welfare organizations that people in the low-wage sectors, saying that people in the low-wage sector do not have the competence and in particular not the digital confidence to use these services and would rather just withdraw and not use these at all, use the services at all. And there again, we have a social justice issue. If such services are developed and if they become exclusive, then we have first the classic privacy questions, we have IT security questions, but also the social justice questions that are coming up. And these are very much ignored, perhaps because we as a group don't really have the focus on them. There's probably not that many people here that are in that sector, so we cannot really include that in our thoughts. So again, it is quite important to open that debate and show how and why this is all relevant, even though it's a fairly dry and abstract issue such as the digital euro. Another issue, e-evidence. I am a lawyer, a defense lawyer, a criminal law. So has anyone seen this? There has been some debate about the CSAM regulation. It's a regulation that enables polices from EU member states, just the polices, not through a permission by a judge, give them access to evidence material directly. This can be anything, traffic data, customer subscriber data, user data. Authorities are supposed to get direct access to other countries' databases, so the Hungarian authorities in Ireland, say. Another thing, maybe about things that are not even illegal in Ireland, someone who has posted something, and there's supposed to be direct access with hardly any security barriers, so safeguards in English. So the actual thinking was that we would use the national rules, which in Germany would mean a judge has to give permission, but that has been completely ignored. And the sense is now that it's so much easier for polices to access these data than it is for the Federal Criminal Police Office within Germany. This was put forward in 2018, and the first storm in the public was then created. Various people said this is impossible, but then it kind of was hidden from view. The European Parliament came up with a position with certain changes to make it more secure. And they anchored some professional privileges such as doctor secrecy. Then there was the so-called trilogue, which we're going to talk about a bit more. And at the last moment, the whole thing, all the safeguards were taken out, and time was up. And the council of the European Council, the representation of the governments, simply prevailed with their position. And I took a look recently. There were some studies. Until 2020, there were a lot of publications, and the law got passed. And since then, we have about one piece news item saying it has been passed, and it will come into force soon. And maybe then someone will go to the courts about it.
That's
the.
And now the last of those keywords. I think by now you're happy that we didn't go through the whole slide you saw before. The European health data space, the European. That comes from a totally different area. It's about the health services, as the name says. The idea is, and the idea isn't bad, the devil is in the detail, to say we need to improve science about health, research about health, and we need to use it to improve the quality of care and personalize health care, get a better picture of the situation. And of course, for health, that's always at the level of an individual. It means it's about me, my health data, my illnesses, and so on. So deeply private data sets, images of your health, pictures in the data that are supposed to be created. And the data that comes in through the healthcare system should be used by research systematically. Research sounds nice, but research is not just done at universities. It's happening in companies. And zack, one firewall has fallen, and our data is out there. It's about developing new pharmaceutical help or something, but we never know what happens with it. Anonymization is not it's not possible to make anonymous because certain illnesses are very rare. So for us, the EHDS is also about, at many places we need a good judgment where we shouldn't be leveraged by, hey, it's about health. You can't be against better health. You want cancer not to be cured. Of course we want this. Everyone in this room wants this, but still we need to ensure that digital rights are protected, because even those, they they endanger people when they fall. That means it's our call to action. Let's not get confused by arguments such as, don't you want to cure cancer? Of course we want, but in a way that's informed and where everyone is on the table, and also us, we are getting heard. So we made it through this tour de force quite well. You saw there are many topics, many more than we talked about by now. And to get you engaged in this, I brought a screenshot that isn't quite right. By the EU, as opposed to the federal politics, there are some tools that that make it easier for civil society and activists to stay informed what's happening, what are the next steps, what are deadlines, and so on. And one of those tools is the EU legislative trains. And for a few months, it existed as a small pixel world with a train station and small trains, a simulation, super cute. That's how it was depicted. And I was clicked on the DSA train and nothing happened. Unfortunately, they changed this and it looks very boring. I personally am annoyed at the EU that they took away those trains. But anyway, there is this overview over the different laws and the data that's connected to that. It's still called EU legislative trains, and now you know where that name comes from. Despite all those tools, it's quite difficult to keep the overview. And that's the reason why for us, both of us, and probably for all of us, the invisible third organization that's on the stage with us, EDRI in Brussels, is so important. They are on the ground. They follow up on those deadlines. They prepare this knowledge and publish it. and make activism on a national level possible, because for us it would be impossible to stay up to date on everything. Yeah. Despite all the transparency that the parliament gives you, it is like a science to follow this. They have a lot of stuff, but you need to know where to look. And it can be hidden in obscure places. Parliament is still the transparency of the EU. On the level of parliament, transparency works quite well, but there's still the big black box of the council where all the governments negotiate. Just shortly, briefly. Basically, laws, regulations in Europe are done in a way that the Commission proposes something. It's like a government. And after that, the European Parliament and the Council, which is like a second chamber of Parliament, it gets negotiated. Certain majorities are needed. And that's what happens in special councils where there is transparency. And in the Council where the governments are in, no transparency is provided. You can't get in. Net politics, State Watch might leak a document every now and then. We get some information. But in the end, there are positions of the different members of the Commission. There was a proposal. The Council had their own position, which was usually not what we would wish for as a rule, unfortunately. And in Parliament, we sometimes managed to get a few things negotiated in, but then they have their position, and then it goes to the so-called trio negotiation.
Trilogue
negotiation. The Council, the Commission, and there's a new negotiation, a lot of discussion, and this happens behind closed doors. To get documents about that, there were tries through different channels. But that's super complicated to get anything. So the trilogue negotiations, for instance, about e-evidence, there's quite a good position in Parliament. There was a lot of work in there. And in the end, the Council gets their way, and Parliament just votes on it. And it's very, very difficult to get a hold of that. I'm so negative all the time. Yeah, that's why I get to something positive, the possible spaces of action here. Yeah. Where, just to give you ideas, where you in the future can get engaged, where you might have enough time to read up on it, and where you're probably also needed. And what I brought you is a proposal by the Commission. It's a fitness check, so-called. They do it when they have a law and want to check it, whether it's still up to the with the times. It's a classical check of fitness. Is this still valid? And that just happened. They were working on it. You see here the legislative train. It's not trains anymore, not as pretty, but still. And it's about digital, the protection of digital consumers.
So it's about fairness, as in terms of digital fairness, in the sense that consumer protection, which of course is an established value and relies on or is founded on certain principles, that this should, that this was actually the rules for that were made before the digital age. And the question was asked, are there new challenges in consumer protection that were not really considered at the time? And again, we at Super see from a socialist perspective that there is a large amount of things that need to be done, not just because of the digital developments, but there are so many other questions about digital gambling, for example, that weren't thought. But consumer protection itself as a whole has become aged, and they talk or consider a certain average consumer, average with average information. We're not an average society anymore. We have very different capacities, preferences, abilities, strengths, and weaknesses. And I believe that consumer protection in the digital field that is future-proof has to consider that. And that is a very interesting debate. And here we see in this review, a first consultation has taken place. where consumer protection organizations have taken part. And in the next year, we will see concrete recommendations for improvements in consumer protection law to get it into the digital age. And that will be our moment where the values that we have about digital rights could be inserted and brought into the debate. And now back to a really mean issue, a terrible one actually, Eurodac. I don't know if anyone knows what that is. It's a database with dactyloscopic data, meaning fingerprints. It's a large database, and in particular, refugees are being stored there. And for a few years, there has been a debate about that, which is getting moving. And I'll try to get to something positive in a moment. The reason why I'm talking about it is that this is supposed to be extended. Biometric data, meaning facial data, is supposed to be stored. Children from the age of 6 are supposed to get stored. Technical details are supposed to be regarding certain statistics are going to be extended in order to capture the movements of refugees around Europe and what are the goals, where they want to go. This is quite a terrible project, and in order with this whole asylum package, this was supposed to be included. It's now probably going to be decoupled and become an independent file in the European lawmaking process. The trilogue negotiations have progressed quite far, but in order to not get too negative and in order to kind of transition to our final plea, this database is an original net politics issue, isn't it? It's a database with biometric data, and it's a as always, minorities such as refugees are a kind of a test case where data is being linked to other sources, and this is then further and further extended. So it's a classic network politics surveillance issue, but it's also very clear that it's not just affecting us, not just those that are in the fight for privacy and against surveillance. It massively affects refugees, migration movements, which is actually a large movement in terms of numbers. So it should be so obvious that we should work together, because it's also a strong political movement, and we should get involved in the privacy assessment of it. And this should be about the core of this database, the fact that migration is to be fought and limited, and that's a way to get together with other movements and say, we're not making data protection issue because it's something that we personally like. It's a fundamental value in society, and that gets us to our final plea. You've said already that others should be included in our thinking. We shouldn't just be in our small bubble and withdraw to that. We should actually approach each other. We should think about Europe. We should get in contact if you want to work together. And when I say we, I do mean all those people here in the room and elsewhere. And in the European net politics bubble, there is this debate on whether we shouldn't go back to the core issues, anti-surveillance issues and such, privacy, in order to get taken seriously. EDRI has quite a good reputation. Everyone wants to talk with them because we do have all this expertise that others may not have. And that is a serious argument, sure, but as we've tried to show, there are so many different and terrible things, especially regarding core issues in politics, basic rights, human rights, then we cannot just say we are in our little bubble and it's about privacy, that should be considered. No, if we are supposed to have an effect and if we are to pursue what is happening, who is affected? We shouldn't do this alone, but we should get together with others, and we need their expertise, and we should understand what it does if we have such an identification system all around Europe. Do we actually consider the others that may not have papers, for example? So there is a lot to learn, and there is some expertise that we can contribute as well.
Exactly. And in the end, we cannot bring in expertise that's missing. We get them, as you said, and in the end, we bring a stronger case, the stronger arguments, I think, because for us, it's obvious why we need to strengthen data protection or keep it up. But to say it's not a question of data protection and meta concept, it's also at the same time fundamental questions of social justice, social structures, also the protection of democracy as a whole in times where everything gets worse and falls apart. I think that's a very strong narrative, but we cannot do this out ourselves and alone. We need the gangs that we need to form, the global and transdisciplinary gangs, which we today start building, I hope. It also includes that we across our own expand our own borders, and because I, for instance, come from a fundamental rights perspective, and such topics are often off-putting. As soon as there is computers and digitalization, many people who aren't all that privileged or academic, they think it's very, very complex. I call the CCC or SuperLab or something. Those people are supposed to do that. We don't know that. That also happens with the chat control sometimes. Germany is a bit shy with those topics. We know that it affects other people, but that won't change until we explain ourselves better, that it's not just about data protection, but there's also a political point to that. And with that, we would be at the end of our talk. Thanks very much for your attention, and we're looking forward to conversations with you and questions. Thanks a lot.
So you had an example here. I think it was about the child sex abuse material regulation, where you said that in Germany it's possible to get involved in the debate, but not in other countries. And that reminds me of the upload filter debate, which under the issue of upload filters was debated in France. It was the GAFA term, the large corporations that dominate extract the profits. And I think good arguments we can see cannot make it out of their own language bubble into the next. And is that the case? What do you think? Are there any approaches for improving that?
Well, exactly. I think that's a complex question, because probably for each debate and for each case it needs to be led again. But I think it makes a lot of sense to say there isn't one narrative that works everywhere, but what we need to do is to tell each other what works well in our respective countries, which arguments we used, and what the reactions were. But I think, like you said, in some scenes or in some countries, the protectionist argument works better. In others, the entrepreneurial spirit, we need to create more startups, that works better there. I think all we can do is test, talk with each other, actually, stay connected, and learn together what works where. And I hope, let's hope, we're at some point we're on the shoulders of giants, and we've learned a lot, and we know a bit better how to orient. But I think it's not that simple. Not that you implied that, but yeah, I think that's a very long process. And that would also make it easier. It would make it easier if it was about fundamental rights, shared fundamental rights. That's the case. We tried to kind of translate that. How can we translate the movie that we made? Does it work in other languages? But I think it might work easier if we could debate a political base. Basic layer together, that it's about data protection, and that among the people that are active, if that works in the public of those respective countries, that's unclear.
A question, or rather a request. There's an echo. The request is, this whole debate is full of acronyms, but please do spell out this one acronym, child sexual abuse material, because otherwise it is hidden in this term CSAM, and that is not what it deserves. So please, all of you that are in this room and you on the stage there, do not use that acronym. Spell it out each time and write it out,
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. And frequently people were, you said that you want a broader, part of a broader movement where more countries or more people agree, not just focus on data protection, but that makes you more prone to attack too. Maybe that could include opinions that are not popular everywhere. And if you spread yourselves over various areas, you may lose influence if some parties will no longer cooperate with you. If you are put into a very small political spectrum, which no longer has a majority, perhaps.
Yeah, that's actually a serious argument. Realistically, especially on the European level, we're usually in opposition to the Conservative Party, and the even more right-wing parties, we don't really collaborate, and no one wants that, to talk with them. Usually with the positions we have at the core, data protection and so on, we're usually in opposition. And they know they can talk to us and should talk with us. We have the technical expertise. They know that. And they know that, but they also know we're usually on the other side.
Okay.
All right, then I don't see any more questions. And then I would thank our speakers and enjoy the rest of the evening. And we will be signing off.
And I hope you have actually been able to hear us and let me. Useful.